You are listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories told live on the Moth Radio Hour. A young girl enters a school talent show. A boy learns some family secrets when his mom returns from a trip to India. And an online shopping session goes wrong. Those stories and more tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, nearly 23 million fewer people in the United States would have health insurance over the next decade if the GOP's health insurance legislation passes in the Senate.
That's the assessment from the Congressional Budget Office, which released its score of the American Health Care Act yesterday.
Donna Friedsam joins us now for more. She's a researcher and health policy programs director at the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. Donna, welcome back to Central Time.
Glad to be with you.
What is your takeaway, big picture, from this Congressional Budget Office report on the American Health Care Act?
Well, the report is not terribly surprising. It affirms pretty much the same findings that had come out in March based on the previous iteration of the American Health Care Act. We knew then that there was going to be coverage losses based on changes to the Affordable Care Act, and the previous estimate was a reduction in insured of about 24 million people, and the current report is 23 million. And a large amount of that reduction comes from Medicaid. And so we really don't see a lot of difference. The details of how those changes come about and all the conversations we've been having in the last several weeks about high-risk pools and pre-existing conditions, those are things we can get into that might make a difference for different populations. But the bottom lines haven't changed a whole lot, even with the changes to the bill.
Now, talking about that 23 million number, it means that, as I understand, in 10 years, 23 million fewer people would have coverage as compared to what would happen by then under the current system. It doesn't mean 23 million people who have coverage today will lose it after the passage of the act. Is that right?
Correct. The estimate is that there will be 23 million more uninsured than under current law.
And you said the big part of that came out of Medicaid changes. What would change, or who would be taken off of coverage under Medicaid?
So within those 23 million, the estimate is that 14 million of them would be people losing Medicaid coverage. And that comes from, in part, a little more than half of that comes from the provision in the Affordable Care Act that allowed for states to expand their Medicaid coverage for adults that had previously not had that coverage. So a number of states, 32 states, including the District of Columbia, had expanded their coverage and received a very high percentage of federal matching funds to expand. And so under this, under the AHCA, that federal support for those expansions would be ended. And so the expectation is that the states would not have the wherewithal to continue supporting that expanded coverage. Now, in Wisconsin, people are likely aware that we did not in our state participate in the ACA's Medicaid expansion. We did expand for some low-income adults without the not using the ACA Medicaid expansion. And so we wouldn't be directly affected by that. However, there are some other very substantial changes under the Medicaid program in this new bill under the AHCA that affects all states. And I can continue and go into details there if you'd like to know. So the AHCA has provisions that really substantially change the Medicaid program nationally. So the way it's currently structured is that we in our state get about, we have a matching rate, so it's about 59% federal money to 41% state money. And no matter how much we spend in our Medicaid program, we're going to get that federal match for our expenditures. Now, there are some details in the match changes for certain specific populations and programs, but that's the basic story. And so if more people come onto the program, if the expenses get higher, et cetera, we're always going to get that federal match, no matter how much it costs the federal government. This program under the AHCA changes that. So it essentially caps the amount of federal contribution. And so it will turn it to what's called a per capita cap, or at the state can ask for a block grant, which would be just a set amount of money, or a per capita cap would be a specific amount of money per individual person. And that would be set at the 2016 rate of spending for the state. So they would look at what our state is currently spending in 2016, and then it would increase at just a consistent rate tied to the Consumer Price Index medical component, which is historically much lower than what we might expect from an increase in Medicaid expenditures over time. So if that change does come to pass, there will be a growing difference between what the federal government is giving us to run our Medicaid program and what it's costing states to run our Medicaid program.
And I want to jump in there, because this is a time when the economy is doing pretty well, employment's looking pretty good. Could we find a situation where we set our fixed amount from the federal government at this pretty happy place, the economy turns down, in a few years more people need coverage, and we're still getting the same amount of money?
Well, and this is the big concern around a block grant, where the federal government says you just get this fixed amount of money overall, and that fixed amount of money doesn't change no matter how many people you have enrolled in the program. What a per capita cap model does is it says, for the sake of simplicity, it'll say we're going to give the federal government will give us $1,000 per each individual enrolled. So we could, in theory, increase the number of people enrolled in the program, but still only get that $1,000 per individual. So it will fluctuate based on the total numbers enrolled, if it's a per capita cap as opposed to a straight block grant. I know this is getting a little complicated to understand, but it does provide that degree of flexibility. The big concern that still remains, though, is that the amount doesn't increase even under a per capita cap in a way that would be consistent with what we might expect to increase in a Medicaid program. And even, yes, in economic downturns that are where we might have outbreaks of certain diseases or conditions. So if and when that does happen, the state is going to be left with expenses that we'll have to figure out how to cover in other ways. And the ways that a state can reduce their expenses in the Medicaid program are to reduce payments to providers, or reduce the benefit package for people enrolled, or as you noted, reduce the number of people eligible for the program, or somehow find efficiencies in the healthcare system by changing the way the healthcare system operates. But it's not easy to find those savings.
Talking to Donna Friedsam from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, looking at the American Healthcare Act, the Republican Congressional Plan, new score from the Congressional Budget Office. Donna, we focused a lot on Medicaid so far. When people think of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, I think they think of the individual marketplace where people can go onto healthcare.gov. What changes in that, and how would that affect, according to this report, how many people are covered?
So I'm going to speak in Wisconsin numbers specifically, since that's our state. And the American Healthcare Act substantially changes the federal subsidies that are tax credits that are available for people who purchase their insurance individually, not getting it through their employers. So under the, and I'll use the term Obamacare, which I use interchangeably with the ACA, but under the ACA or Obamacare, currently people get a federal tax subsidy depending on their income. So it's a larger subsidy if they're lower income, and it's a smaller subsidy as their income increases. And the subsidy disappears if their income is more than four times the federal poverty level. And the AHCA changes the structure of that subsidy, so and reduces the subsidy quite significantly overall. And with that, what we would see is many fewer people being eligible for the subsidy, but also more less subsidy for lower income people and more of a subsidy perhaps for people with a little bit more income. And overall, we'd see a reduction in enrollment in the individual market because of a belief that it would be less affordable overall to people. So some projections that have come out just over the last few days suggest that overall enrollment over 10 years in the individual market in Wisconsin would decline by about 130,000 people, which is one-third, or more than one-third of our total enrollment in the individual market today.
We're talking about the American Health Care Act, the plan passed in the U.S. House, still on hold in the U.S. Senate. Donna Friedsam with us from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of the score on the American Health Care Act? Do you think that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, should be repealed, or should we maybe keep it around, maybe with improvements? And what do you think of the new Republican plan for health care? Do you like it? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about the Republican American Health Care Act and the score it received yesterday from the Congressional Budget Office. Donna Friedsam is with us, researcher and health policy programs director at the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute.
And you can join our conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of the American Health Care Act? You can give us a call now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Donna, we've talked about raw coverage numbers so far, but a lot of people concerned about the quality of coverage, what kind of care is included in the coverage, and then, of course, premiums and out-of-pocket costs. What kind of things do we see changing there?
The AHCA contemplates the idea that if we remove regulations from insurance, people can get the kind of insurance that they want and not buy things that they don't want or need. And so the idea there, in theory, is that young, healthy people only need to buy very light coverage, or what some people call skinny policies, and so they will get insurance policies that don't cost very much, and that will bring them more into the insurance market, and so more younger, healthy people will enroll. And we see that in the CBO estimates, that they show more younger, healthier people may indeed come into the market. So they will have lower premiums, but they will also have much higher deductibles and co-payments because their policies will not be very substantial. On the other side of that, though, is because you don't have a lot of young, healthy people sharing in the costs of comprehensive coverage, then policies that do have comprehensive coverage become very expensive. And so people who need to have comprehensive coverage, and that generally becomes older people or even middle-aged to older people, those policies become much more expensive, and the premiums get higher for that group of people. You heard over the last few weeks a lot of discussion about concern for people, for example, with pre-existing conditions and what might happen with those people. Now, let me say the AHCA does retain the Obamacare provisions that protect coverage for pre-existing conditions, but it does allow states to waive those provisions so that in that states can choose to let insurance providers price their policies based on an individual's health status, and they can eliminate the what's called the essential health benefits package, or what's basically a floor in the coverage that insurance providers must provide, the kind of package they must provide. So if states were to do that, then we would see what I just described, where there would be these kind of skinny benefit packages that would attract younger, healthy people at a very low premium, but possibly high deductibles and co-payments. But we would see much higher premiums for people who had health needs, and possibly and very likely people with pre-existing conditions getting priced out of that market entirely. And that leads to that discussion about would there be high-risk pools being set up to move people with high-risk or pre-existing conditions entirely out of the regular insurance market and into their own pool, and whether that would be a potential solution. That is something that is a premise under, for the AHCA. There's some funding available for states to, in fact, set up these high-risk pools in order to try to take care of people with pre-existing conditions. A great concern is that the amount of funds that are made available in the AHCA seem to be much lower than what most analyses suggest would be needed to handle the health care needs of people with pre-existing conditions.
I want to bring on a caller now. We've got Jeremy on the line in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not a big fan of the new proposal, and I'm not a big fan of the Obamacare, because we keep dancing around the core purpose or reason why we pay high health care costs is that we're not looking at the facilitators, the doctors, the liability insurance premiums that doctors have to pay, the excessive health care for a simple checkup. They do extra things that they don't really need to do just to cover themselves. We need to start looking at the facilitators and stop beating up on the insurance companies completely. We need to look at, again, the doctors and what we're really paying for and why we're paying so much for it.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. Jeremy's saying, hey, we need to tackle the costs if we're going to bring down the cost of health care.
I think Jeremy makes a great point. Health insurance costs a lot because health care costs a lot. And we do have a lot of excessive costs in our health care system. Some of it is due to inappropriate utilization, like he mentions, and that we do have a lot of waste in our system, and we also have a lot of efficiencies that we need to find, and a lot of it, quite honestly, is excessive pricing. So we need to look at that and try to address that. And there's, I don't think he'd have any argument there from most people who are looking at how to solve these great problems we have in healthcare policy. At the same time, we have tens of millions of uninsured people nationally, and in Wisconsin we still have 300,000 uninsured people and people who need coverage and care today. So while we're trying to work on this issue of costs, we still need to figure out how to get people the care they need today, and that's why we have this great conversation here in Wisconsin and nationally about how do we do that while we also address these costs.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to David with us in Ironwood, Michigan. David, hi.
Yes, I think they should just make insurance. If we buy the same plan, I think it should be the same price. Unfortunately, if we went to any insurance company and pick up the same plan, well, heck, I had leukemia and stuff, and maybe you're healthy, you know, my insurance rates would be a lot higher. But, you know, you say, why should I pay for a sick person? Well, tomorrow you might be that sick person. I mean, up till the point I got my leukemia, I was good health. All of a sudden, I had leukemia. Now I'm, you know, high risk. It's just, you know. And it also affects my employability. I have two associate's degrees. And they, oh, yeah. And then come medical exam, and they find some way, well, we're not hiring now or whatever.
David, thanks for calling, and good luck to you. Donna, that's the problem we're trying to deal with here, the different health care costs and thus insurance costs for people in different health situations.
Well, David made the point that it was exactly what underlied a lot of the structure of the Obamacare. They were trying to create a system where everybody shared in the risk, recognizing that at any point anybody could be sick, and that, you know, insurance pools are about pooling risk. So if we want to pool risk broadly and get healthy people and sick people and young people and old people to share risk across the population, then that is what is called community rating. But when that happens, then you do have younger, healthier people paying higher premiums in order to subsidize the care for older or sicker people. And that's something that became a challenging conversation in this country over the last couple of years, when some people who had previously had perhaps less rich coverage, who felt like they were younger or healthier, or they had less rich coverage and for the moment didn't feel like they needed anything more, started seeing their health insurance policies changed or canceled in favor of Obamacare compliant policies, and they said, why do I have to buy this? So that became a political problem.
Donna, as we start to wrap up, Republicans are saying, okay, maybe these some people lose coverage, but the current system is unsustainable as it currently is. Is there something to that?
Well, you know, we've heard a lot about risks, death spirals and the like, but the data that we have today suggests that the Affordable Care Act and the insurance markets are and would be stable going forward. There certainly are some fixes that need to happen to the law. There are some states, indeed, where the insurers are pulling out of the market for various reasons. There could be some fixes there. But there are many states where the ACA is working very well, Wisconsin actually being one of them. We had 15 insurance carriers in the ACA marketplace over the last open enrollment period, and we have about 230,000 people that chose Obamacare policies over the last period. So I think most analyses by actuarial firms and the like suggest, no, that it is not collapsing on its own. However, I will note that given the uncertainty that's developed over the last several months and the potential threat at the federal level that the federal government won't pay for the cost-sharing reductions for eligible people.
We'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Donna Friedsam from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute looking at the Republican American Health Care Act.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, an orchestra conductor tells us how listening can make us better listeners and leaders, and how we can be better listeners ourselves.
That and tomorrow's edition of Food Friday, barbecuing. It's all coming up tomorrow on Central Time.